Okay, I'm on the road. Going to the crash sites Sunday night. I have a... I'm constantly adding and un-adding This Week in Mormons. I forget his name, Openshaw. I think his big thing is he touts himself as a liberal Mormon. It makes me recall an old talk. I think it was from Mark E. Peterson or from Harold B. Lee about the fact that there are no liberal Latter-day Saints. And this was back when being liberal would be considered like nothing today. You know, this is about equal rights for women, stuff like that. A lot of people today enjoy the perceived edginess of being LGBTQ. I myself have a daughter who has declared herself transgender, takes testosterone, has had her breast removed, and my opinion hasn't changed of that activity, that I don't think it, the things that bother her that she calls identity, I think have roots in other things that are probably more chemical imbalancing. I don't think testosterone improves the situation, although I'm sure she'll swear up and down now that she's, you know, that she's off everything except testosterone. It's like, well, like I told her when she said what she said, and then she ran. And all I said was, I can't go down that road with you. I'm not going to go down that road with you. And that was all. But later on, I felt anger. Well, I don't know if anger is so much the right word. I felt like all of the relationship that we had up until that point, she just blew away and said, that person doesn't exist anymore. And you're going, no, I'm sorry. I've still got that relationship with you. You know? And so, yeah, does it feel like you've chosen to kill my daughter? And replace her with something else. I don't know what. But I'm sorry. I'm not going to sit there. I'm not going to be supportive of it. I'm not going to appreciate it. I'm not going to sit there and even, you know, I'm not going to be accepting. I'm going to say, no, you're still that person. She had plenty of character flaws. And I don't know if she was hoping that with this thing she could rewrite her entire thing. The problem was, as part of rewriting herself, number one, I don't think she really fixed any of those inherent troubles. You know, at least I haven't seen the evidence that she's become a better person. You know, she goes, well, I'm a man now. And you go, yeah, but I don't see that you're a better person out of choosing to become a man. I thought that was the point of it. And you go, you know, but I got to tell you, I wasn't expecting a lot. Come on. This isn't the way that you know, if you're a person who has addictions or stuff like that, I'm not talking about my daughter now, you know, changing your gender isn't going to fix that. It isn't even supposed to. I think what the hope is that when you go transgender, you are supposed to get a whole lot of breaks. You know, all of a sudden people go, oh, you know, we can't, they have been so mistreated. And that's really what it came down to, is my daughter started really saying how horrible and nasty and terrible I was. And I can give you a catalog, a laundry list of things that I helped her do, debts I paid for her, opportunities that I opened up to help her to get to some place that was better. The situation she has now is an outgrowth of several things that I and other members of the family did to try to help her get my daughter, to help her get to some place that was more comfortable for her, didn't make so many demands on her that she struggled to meet. You know, and that's fine, you know, people do that. And that's okay. You have to find your place. Changing your gender does nothing to improve that. It does nothing. What it does is it gives you an excuse to be mean to other people, you know, because they go, oh, wait a minute, I'm confused. Who are you? What? Oh, how dare you? How dare you? And it's like, oh, good night. So it's almost like you can't even talk to her about anything without her taking offense at it. And I think it's all calculated to get you to just leave her alone and go away. And it's like, excuse me, you know, I'm still your parent. I want good things to happen for you. But I'm also going to try to help you with the problems that you have. And one of the ways you have to do that is you do have to let people know what their problems are. Anyway, and that really wasn't the point of me doing this and saying, oh, well, here's the thing about This Week in Mormons. the podcast. This guy prides himself, and you know, whatever, in being very liberal, you know, and in saying, well, you know, the church is kind of, it isn't very hip to us, and you're going, says it really becomes the whole question of, are you really helping people get back to Christ? What are the purposes of the church, and you know, and how does attempting to alter the church to make it more, and I don't want to use the stupid words they were, the kind of wordplay that is used to try to make it all sound like it's a wonderful thing. Trying to change the doctrine of Christ, trying to change the gospel as revealed to us through Joseph Smith, to make transvestites, cross-dressers, all these people feel homey and nested in the church. And you're going, the only problem is your activities, what you do, how you believe, the direction you're going in, has nothing to do with exaltation, which is what the church is here for. The thing that that's the most important thing, and this certainly comes up, the scripture actually says that you accept, no, is that you don't disallow anybody from coming to church. You don't do it. Well, and then see, that's what they hang their hat on. But you're going, you can come to church all the time, but the whole point to come to church isn't to change the church into something that pleases you, something that makes you feel good. The biggest thing is, I don't want to feel guilty. I don't want to feel like I need to change. And you go, I'm sorry. The absolute purpose of the church is to help us to change, to become more godly, to better follow the example of Jesus Christ, which, well, I'm sorry, was not a transvestite. We don't know how Jesus Christ feels about transvestites, for the very reason that apparently he didn't interact with one in the New Testament, and it wasn't added, you know, and it wasn't clarified in anything else, like the Book of Mormon or the Doctrine and Covenants or the Pearl of Great Price. It just wasn't there. And so, you know, you can say all day long, well, Jesus would have been accepting. He loves everybody. And you go, I don't know that. I don't know that. It's hard to project what Jesus would have said about something when he didn't say anything about it, except for one thing, which is, you know, don't ever turn people out from the church. But that doesn't mean that you change the church to make it more comfortable for people who have absolutely no intention of following Jesus Christ, changing their lives to become, to align yourself more with him, and working out one's exaltation. The church is not there to be a comfortable place for people like that. If you want to come, come. And you should not be sent out. Now, if you are a member of the church and you are preaching doctrines and principles against the gospel, you will lose your membership. And it will not be, you know, and it'll be, you know, you can come. That doesn't mean you're going to be permitted to speak. It doesn't mean that you're going to be permitted to give prayers. It doesn't mean that you are invited to participate in discussions about the gospel. The point of the church is not to give people a forum to be antagonistic to the gospel of Jesus Christ as revealed to us through Joseph Smith. If you have a problem with Joseph Smith, you can feel free to air your grievances in other venues. Not at church. Not to those who are... I gotta be honest. The church is to help... It's a first gear church, and I've talked about this before. I don't want to harp on that. Its biggest purpose is to really help people find the gospel, the restored gospel, is to help them through the first principles and ordinances of it, to go through a repentance process if necessary, to get baptized, get the gift of the Holy Ghost, to get you to the temple, to give you the opportunities to access what's needed and to get support for pursuing exaltation. That's what it's about. And it's not there to provide a community to make you feel good about stuff like that. Now, in a way, if you feel like it is a community where you feel comfortable and stuff like that, that's nice. That's nice. You know, but the whole point of the fellowship is to have fellowship with people who desire the same thing and want to go down the same road. It is not there to help the children or the grandchildren of stalwart Latter-day Saints to be able to believe and think and follow whatever they good and well please, but feel like that, well, you know, well, my grandmother was a member of the church and my parents were members of the church, therefore you guys need to accommodate me. And you go, no, this is not some weird multi-generational culture fest. It really isn't. It's got a very specific purpose. Now, in the past, have the cultural isms of Mormonism been very, very important? Yes, they are now less so, because the doctrine, the restored gospel of Jesus Christ, and I'll repeat this ad nauseum. The restored gospel of Jesus Christ, given to us through Joseph Smith, is what this is about. If you have a problem with polygamy, or the fact that Joseph Smith practiced polygamy on some level, that Brigham Young and many of the early brethren practiced it very openly, if you have a huge problem with that, and that just, you know, and And you say, well, I have a right because I'm the great-great-grandson or great-great-granddaughter of Brigham Young, that you have some ancestral right to go into the church and you know, castigate your great-great-grandfather and say that he wasn't a prophet, that he was a filthy, you know, pedophile or whatever. However you want to state it. And you go, there's other places you can go and do that. There are splinter groups in the church where you can go and you can say all the nasty things about Brigham Young or about any of these people that you want to. It's just, it does not give you some kind of weird right to go in and say, I demand to feel loved and accepted and comfortable at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And you go, let me tell you how you feel comfortable and accepted and everything else like that, is that you're on the same path as we are. You're trying to get to exaltation. You are not trying to publish a detour from that path. You aren't willing to do, you know, that you're not going to do that. So, yes, I don't have any particular respect for these people. Most of the quote LGBT plus Q whatever people I have met have been of a destructive nature. And their interest and the biggest thing that they want to do is they want to destroy everything that doesn't worship them. And that is not what the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is about. It's not what I'm about, you know, as either a priest of Jehovah in the Old Covenant, a descendant of Aaron, or as an elder of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I don't speak for the church, but I can speak for myself quite well. The thing you can do in relation to the church is visitors welcome. You're welcome to come. You are not there to take over the church. You are not there to take over the discussion. You are not there to get in the way of the basic goals of the church, which is to promulgate the restored gospel of Jesus Christ, to do and perform and promulgate the covenants of the restored gospel, and to be a support and help to those who want exaltation. We get on some very dangerous ground as, you know, to be honest, I think it really came of trying to be so loving and supportive of single mothers and divorcees and things like that, trying and saying, oh, we're going to find a place for you here and it's wonderful. And you go, as long as you are working toward exaltation, that's fine. But it almost came from the whole thing of, well, this was a child of one of our old-timey members. They're one of us. Boy, I hear that all the time, and sometimes I just cringe at it. You know, they're one of us. Therefore, we're going to be supportive of them no matter what activities they are engaged in. And you go, no, it's only if they're signed on, and can I be honest? That's what baptism is. Baptism says, I'm signed on to the program. I am going to go forward and I'm going to do these things. If it ends up being that they're just not either interested or it's not anything of that, it's like, you know what? I'm the first one to say, you know, if you're not interested in any of this, then we're not really particularly here to single out you for a special support. We're just not there. You're in the same camp as anybody else out in the larger Gentile. I'll just use the offensive words. The Gentile community. We're nice to you. We don't want bad things to happen to you. But yeah, you get mostly treated as just a member of a group of people. And yeah, do we give you a special help? No. You know, if there is another group, you know, that said, I am totally in favor of the church giving some support to outside organizations that help the poor, just in general, you know, we are especially and personally interested in those who are struggling that way, who are signed on to our program. Those will be the first people to get assistance. Those will be the first person to whom that we will offer the lion's share of support, is in the accomplishment of our goals. You know, we don't not help other people, but yeah, do we help them in the same way that we help people that are on the other thing? No. We have a wonderful Christian charity called the Ministry of Hope in Tucumcari, and I think it would be no problem if our church decided to give money to that group. In fact, what I would have a tendency to do is say, if a person needs help and we identify a person and they need help, to send them there and to say, you know, this is how we assist those who are not members of our immediate community. You know? And have people say, no, I'll give help to the Ministry of Hope, and that's where I send people who are not Latter-day Saints or who really don't have any interest in what the church does. You know, just really not interested. That's as simple as that, you know, and that's my same attitude about, you know, in our family, Lisa and I got together, I think it was mostly my idea, but Lisa said, oh, that sounds good to me, called the 1927 rule, and it sounds kind of harsh. I said, this rule applies to my children, and only my children. you know? Which is this, you know, at 19, if you're living at home, you're going to pay rent. And it's going to be, you know, it's not big. I think right now, the children I have at home that are over, that are 19 or older, that are living at home, they pay $150 a month to help support the endeavor of providing for the family. And the 27 part, that's why it's called the 1927 rule. The 27 part is if you're 27 years old, this gives you a chance, number one, to go on a mission, and number two, to go to college from home. Now, that's an even more likely thing to be able to do now that, there is a whole lot of virtual college to have, and you can do it at home. We have a local college that lets you go for 2 years. Shayna took advantage of that. And happy to have her do it. Happy to have her do it. And then she left home to go off to the last 2 years of college, and that was fine. She went into debt for it, and that was her choice. I understood it. And she got some help along the way from us, which we were happy to do as well. Although I wanted her to be careful, I'm not, you know, I wasn't giving her a gravy train. Like I say, the 1927 rule is not a permanent hammock. It's not comfortable. You know, I'm not building a bigger, you know, a big huge house to let my kids just come and live at home without, you know, for a cheap price. Anyway, Matt right now is my only son. He's our autistic son, who lives by I think I passed my turn. Great. We got to turn around. Oh. Okay. And that amount is $600, and that helps provide room and board. Because at 27, I expect you to also be in the position to be able to kick in for money, for food, as in addition. And it's still not a bad deal, but I'm not, you know, like I said, I'm not being very comfortable, although Matt's a special case in that he's probably not going to be able to be his own person, make his own way with things. Anyway, so getting hot. Anyway. But I was very poignant about doing it. I said, this only applies to you. It does not apply to you and another, you know, and a spouse of yours. It doesn't apply to your children. The 1927 rule was not designed to handle any of that. Each one of those things would have to be handled on a separate basis. And to be determined, and not really very interested in that happening. It's if you take on yourself that step of becoming an adult to the point to where you are married and you have children, this is, it becomes important that you need to get these things figured out. And that's really all there is to it, you know. And you go, oh, it just sounds so sterile and nasty. And you go, you know what? Sometimes you have to be a little sterile and nasty. I've seen way too many instances, and that's one of the things that that promulgated the 1927 rule, one of the things that kind of was figured into its creation was the things that Lisa and I had seen about parents being way too helpful to their kids, to the point to where their kids never grow up. We have family members, cousins and nieces and nephews, who really kind of got into these things. You know, never really was able to hold down a decent job, never really got any direction, but still lived in one's house and took advantage of all the perks of it and never contributed. And that's, and yeah, he said, I'm sorry. He says, the contribution you're going to make is going to be built in. So trust me, if your family comes back to stay with us, you know, with just, you know, not really gelling, not coming together, is the thing only going to be $600 a month for room and board if we're cooking for you? And the answer is no. And you go, what's the contribution going to be? It's probably going to be more, because there's more mouths being fed. And I'm not going to get suckered in by, oh, but you're not going to let your grandchildren starve, are you? And you go, no, you're not going to play that game. You do not play that game with me. I said, if you're going to play that game, my advice to you is give your child up for adoption. If you can't take care of your children, put them up for adoption. And you go, oh, that's so cruel. And you go, I'm sorry. Are you going to be able to take care of this thing? You want society to basically, you know, whatever extra family thing that you want to do, you want them to take care of you, and you pretty much want it pretty regularly. It's like, you know what? Said, you probably need to put your kids up for adoption. Says, and you go, but I love my kids. And you go, it doesn't matter. Can you handle them? Are you being kind to them? You know, if you're going through divorce or if you're going through something like that, if you got drug problems and things like that. I said, you know, I said, you can choose two courses. You can sit there and try to make like you're going to do a decent job. I said, or, you know, you go, this is the best job I can get. This is the best this and that I can get. And you go, I understand. I understand, but can I tell you something? It says it's nobody else's responsibility to take care of these kids. And I'm sorry. Our system, our social system in the United States of America, in the state of New Mexico, the way you handle the fact that you really don't have the energy to take care of your children is to give them up for adoption. The state will take over wardship of them. You know, they'll find some place to put that child. They will help reimburse that person for the added expenses of taking care of that child. And that's pretty much it. If somebody really wants to take on those kids, you know, it says that's, you know, you can either voluntarily do it and take a little bit of stigma for it, or you can have Children, Youth, and Families Department basically break down your door and take your children from you. It says, you know, and it's nobody else's obligation to take on those children. And you're going, you know, this is, nobody can require somebody else to do constant respite care for free. almost practically raise your children for you. But yet have you say, oh no, I'm their parent, I can do this and I can do that. You go, no, you probably need to just give them up, you know, put them in foster care. That's the first step. And maybe that's all that's needed, is you can't take care of them when they're very small. And you need, and you're going to need that kind of help. And if you need help to that kind of level, put them in foster care for a little while. But then you're going to have a lot of people, there's an agency involved that can help you ascertain if you're in a position to to have them come back into your home again. And that can be determined. Is it wonderful? No. It says, but is it better than what's going on now? And you go, oh, it sounds like it. Yes. It sounds like you're falling apart. It says, and that's okay. It's understandable. You've got all these kids, and these things aren't happening. You will push a lot of things to happen. If their father says, oh, I can't abide to hear that this is happening to these kids, it's like, okay, well then go talk to CYFD and convince them that you're the right person to put them in the care of. You know? Make that be the thing that happens. If you can't handle it any better. It says, you need to get... It says, and I'm not going to turn you in. It says, that's just not interesting to me. I don't think it's abusive what's going on. The schools can turn you in. That's totally up to them. But yeah, so, okay, anyway, so I did all that stuff. Sorry, I'm getting off the whole thing of liberal Mormons about how wonderful we have to be to these people because they are part of our community. And you go, can I be honest? They really aren't. They have chosen to go down a different road. I'm sorry. Most of these LGBT plus people, in order to get on that little track, I said, you aren't really interested in exaltation, are you? I said, it's not really interesting to you. It says, therefore, you are fitting in into this group of, you can come to the church. It says, you can come and be a part of the stuff. Now, we don't want you preaching your stuff particularly. Okay? It says, you're not here to preach your stuff. If that's really important to you, there are other venues for you to be. You know, the church has been quite, I think we've been far too nice to people who decided they are gay or lesbian or stuff like that. What we would consider to be LGBT light. At least what I do, for just, oh, they can do whatever they want, they can be married and stuff like that, blah, 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 blah. Of course, they're all very upset because the local LDS bishop is not consummating such marriages. Of course, some of them will, you know, because they think that's loving. And you go, you know what? The loving act was Jesus Christ performing the atonement so that we could be forgiven of sin, so that we could change. So that we had a space of time to make the changes, to put ourselves back into alignment with Christ and with God, so that we might move forward toward exaltation. It says, that's it. That is the love. Those who kind of go are running as hard as they can against against the iron rod, as described in Lehi's dream, and the path, there are people who just ram against that, wanting that iron rod to include a wider swath of people, and it's just not there. People who want the gate of baptism to get really, 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 really intensely wide. It's not going to get wide. It is narrow. Straight, S-T-R-A-I-T, which doesn't mean that it doesn't curve. It means that. It's just almost kind of a restatement of something narrow. Now, I think it also, it isn't bad to say it's straight, S-T-R-A-I-G-H-T, too. I don't think that's a terrible misjudgment of what was meant by those things. But what it means is that it's a channel. The straight, S-T-R-A-I-T is, you know, the Straits of Gibraltar. Think about that. Thin. You cannot, it doesn't allow for you to crash into either side, and the chances of you doing that are not bad. Very, very much, you need to stay within the lane, because if you don't, you're going to run aground. And that's what the straight means. It's that kind of straight. Straits of Gibraltar. I don't know if there are really straits in Cape Horn. I think there probably is. I think they're called the Straits of Magellan. And that's what you have to navigate those carefully and pointedly. You can't just go willy-nilly down there and not run into the rocks and destroy yourself. Many stories, well, I guess they're not stories because people died, but many tales told of these things happening. It says, and it's so important, and I'm sorry, you know, they say, well, we need to be more accepting of our LGBT brothers and sisters, and you're going, I'm sorry, LGBT people are already kind of on the road of saying, I'm not your brother or your sister. We're not on the same path. I want to go off into these weeds here, and I'm screaming and yelling at you to treat me right and to make the way clear for me to go all the way through the weeds as wherever I want to go, and that you have to clear that way so that Christ says you're okay. And they're going, can't do it. It's not there. Can you come to the church? Yes. You know, I'm sorry. I am not a person who says, well, you're one of us. And you go, I don't necessarily think that. It says, where do we stand? Where do we stand? It would be, it's, one doesn't want to get into the point of saying that we need to give lots and lots of compassionate service to everybody. Number one, resources are tight. There isn't an unlimited amount of money. There's certainly not an unlimited amount of energy out there. If wonderful people want to step in and try to help, that's great. Says, but that's between you and them, and you need to be cognizant of the fact that you can't just willy-nilly use up everybody else's energy. You just can't do it. That is not even decent. thing to do is to say that you expect this, and you expect for a long, long time, for the rest of your life, and you're going, you're asking somebody else to actually be your unmarried spouse. It says, and that's not very nice. So yeah, I said, I'm sorry. I am very much a person that says, we have our culture, our society has systems to help you. Said, you know, and I said, and to be honest, if you really need that level of help, given your circumstances, this is, and I don't want you to, you know, I want you to know that you need to do the best thing for your kids right now. And that isn't being so overwrought that you can't even begin to parent them. You can't even parent them. You have to let the schools teach them what the schools are going to teach them, whatever, you know. And you go, you know, said, this is, because what I don't want you to do is to be in a situation where you're practically being prosecuted by the state for child neglect or child abuse. You don't want it to get there. Says, I will tell you one thing, I will never turn you in. I refuse to do so. I've been turned into to CYFD. I'm not going to do it. But it's definitely something to be said for if you have a lot of kids and you just do not have the energy or the resources or any of that to really take care of them. It says there's putting your kid in foster program without being, you know, without being a criminal. It says that's a wonderful thing. And you will get help from the state, which you desperately need, and to which we all pay lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of taxes to provide these things for you. You're avoiding it, and perhaps not providing your kids with what they really end up needing. There's ways to solve that. And I would never say anything bad about the system. And when people come back and say, oh, it's a terrible thing to suggest, and you're going, excuse me, I've got really good friends that work for CYFD, and they're wonderful people, and they try to do the best they can with the circumstances they're under. Says, and they're wonderful people, and I would entrust them with children. Says, now, are they going to teach you Latter-day Saint values? No, not particularly. Now, if you say it would be really great if a Latter-day Saint took my child, and so that they'd go to church at the LDS church, said, I think they would, that would try, they would attempt to accommodate this. Now they may have to move those kids off to Albuquerque or someplace like that, to someplace who has more foster families, to be able to take that kid in. Says that's exactly proper. It's good stuff. It may be doable. And that's great. So yeah, I'm sorry. I keep getting off the LGBTQ thing. But yeah, I said, you know what? If you're, you are, You are deciding which group you are in. This is, and it isn't like, it isn't like a political party. It isn't like a garden club. This is actually a counterculture or a subculture. I guess that's probably the right way to say it. This is a subculture that is incompatible with the goals of the gospel of Jesus Christ, with the purposes of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So you got, you just have to see it for that right there. You can be as wonderful and loving and as marvelous as you can be to people who are doing this. I'm not going to sit there and call it a struggle. I'm not going to call it any of that. These are people saying, I want to be like this, and I want everybody else to be forced to accept the fact that I want to be like this. I consider it kind of abusive to other people, especially to parents who said, I didn't teach you to be like that. Now, if you're a parent and if you think this is wonderful and fantastic, welcome to the subculture. You know, and guess what? The vast majority of people who go to church and their families are very accommodating of the LGBT subculture. This is, most of them lose interest in the church. And you go, I'm sorry, the church is very pointed. The church is very direct in what they're about. When we don't behave that way, when it starts being the whole thing of, well, this kid was born in Utah, and their parents were members of the church, or are members of the church, we have a responsibility to make them feel comfortable because this is their culture. And you go, no, they've chosen a different culture. And if their parents are very accommodating of them, their parents have chosen another culture too. And you go, what's, you know, and they go, well, I want to go to the temple. And you go, what are your feelings about exaltation? Do you teach these things to your children? And you go, well, I don't teach them to my children because my children have chosen to be allied with subcultures. And you go, where do you stand? Where do you stand? And to a certain degree, when it comes to temple recommend interviews, the questions are the way the questions are stated. And if you answer all the questions the way you're supposed to, or it's not really supposed to, if you answer all the questions in a way to get your temple recommend, we usually give you your temple recommend. He says, now I'm the first one to say you're paying your time. And you go, that one I can look at, and that one's demonstrable. He says, and if you don't, guess what? You're not going to the temple. I'm not going to give you a temple recommend. It's just that simple. You say, oh, he's a horrible person. And you go, I'm sorry. He says, if you feel like I'm the wrong person for the position, then, you know, the stake president can come and say, okay, we're going to get rid of Jason Devereaux. And you go, that's whatever. As you wish. He says, and that's okay. If the church is getting more liberalized and it's being enforced from leadership, then that's where the church is going. And that's a little frightening to me. Because it is, you know, this is pretty much what it entails. I would have to say that of the people that I know, that I have seen from like Facebook and stuff, are very supportive of LGBTQ people. You know, usually their own children or people that they know a whole lot, and they go, they're wonderful people, I love them. You go, that's not the question. The church is not the haven of wonderful people. That's not what it's designed to do. It's not, you know, you can go find the Society of Wonderful People and get everybody to give money to the Society of Wonderful People, and you can provide support and services to those people who are a part of your group. That's not what the church is for. You know, people say, well, they're really wonderful people, and you go, that's fine. But that's not what the church is about. The church is not about wonderful people. It's about people who are on the straight and narrow path that leads to eternal life. A longer but more poignant definition of that is those who have allied themselves through baptism to the restored gospel of Jesus Christ as given to Joseph Smith. And who are striving to reach exaltation. That's it. And I know, you said it, tired of hearing you say it. You know, because it needs to be said again and again and again, because people keep getting weird and trying to say, well, but what about these people? And you go, are they keeping their baptismal covenants? Are they striving to do what it takes to have a temple recommend? Are they working toward exaltation? When you go to the temple, you make certain covenants. Some of them are very poignant. And just paying your tithing doesn't cover the covenants that you make in the temple. There's covenants of sacrifice, and there's a covenant of consecration, which is beyond tithing. And these are the things that get you to exaltation. And if you're not on that path, then you can freely come to the church whenever you want to. It is by the command of Jesus Christ. No one is thrown out of church meetings. No one's thrown out of church meetings. But that doesn't mean you can take over. That doesn't mean you can protest to alter the doctrines of the church and the standards and the policies and all that. That is not what that means, and that is not what you're entitled to do or to say. It's just not there. So it says, and that's how I come to it. And I know some people will say, I'm sorry, I don't like Jason Nemro's definition of all this. They're going, well, I'm sorry, that's what I've got. That's what I see. And so that's what I say. It says, and I can feel free to be censured by whoever, brethren, whatever, to say that we have to be more expansive than that. It says, I don't think I am going to be found faulty. They might get a little worried about the fact that it says, well, it sounds like you're cutting off the children of striving members of the church, and you're going, I very well may be. There you go, but these people need to know. There's too much gushy mushy, but I love my child going around and saying that the church has to accommodate your children who are wayward. And you go, no, we need to be the standard. Says they can come. They can participate in activities. They can be among the saints, even if they don't choose to be one of the saints. That's okay. We bar no one. I don't even know if we bar anybody for health and safety particularly. It doesn't matter. It's not a political thing. It is a gospel thing. It is a following Jesus Christ and the gospel as we received it from Joseph Smith. And if you have a problem with that, it says, it's okay, you can come, but guess what? The church isn't going to alter itself to try to make you feel included. You're just welcome to be there. If you want to be among the saints, that's great, but this is what the saints are working on. And this is what we talk about. And we're not going to particularly talk about stuff outside of this, particularly. It's not, you know, it's just not there. So, yeah, it says, and that's kind of how I feel about all these groups. Is that, you know what? They aren't interested in, you know, they don't seem interested in the program. Here was, boy, a very poignant thing that our gospel doctrine teacher this week, we have two gospel doctrine teachers, Janet Gladue was teaching this week, and she made a very poignant, and I never really gave it much thought, and she really made a point of the fact that there was probably a lot of descendants of Noah who were not saved. She said, you know, he'd been on the earth for 500 years before the flood, and who was saved out of it? Three sons and their wives and his wife, and that's it. That's all. And she said, do you think that in 500 years he probably had more children than that? And she made the assertion that they probably did. It's like, okay, you know, I'm not to say. It certainly brought the fact that apparently he had daughters. You know, that seems to be in there. But that they had chosen to marry outside of the covenant. They had chosen to not be a part of the program, or had rejected their father, or whatever, however it was done. Maybe it had something to do with the fact that they may have decided that they were transgendered, or that they were gay, or lesbians, or what's one of the other cool ones? Gender neutral, asexual, whatever. And I'm sorry, all of these things do not point one toward exaltation. Do you know what exaltation looks like? Do you know what exaltation is? Exaltation is the continuation of seed by a man and a woman sealed together. And the spirit children that are born to them as gods. That's exaltation. These other things will not lead to exaltation. One has to decide to not be one of, you know, you can't be gay and do that. You can't be a lesbian and do that. You can't be transgender and do that. You just can't do it. You would have to repent, which is wonderful. That's part of what this is here for. Please come to church. Will you be accepted? I have no idea. I don't know. I probably won't accept your lifestyle. I will say, if you're interested in exaltation, You need to repent, you need to change, and you need to ally yourself with exaltation. Exaltation is not available to single people. Anybody who defines themselves as LGBT say to themselves, I don't know how one swears to be part of the subculture. I do not know. However, they cannot be such. Single women have, I would imagine that as something close to a special case. I am not sure. My advice would be, you need to get married. Now, that can be done in the millennium. These things can be handled in the millennium. You can be sealed. A single woman can be sealed to a man who qualifies for exaltation already. And therefore, now she will qualify for exaltation as well. But that's going to have to be done under different auspices when such sealings can take place and they work okay. You know, doesn't really work right now in our culture particularly. Doesn't matter to try to make it sound any better. Single sisters are a little bit better, but it's tricky. And too many people in the church as well, seem to extend the kind of support for single sisters to these subcultures. And that doesn't work. That doesn't work. Because these subcultures are not willing to do that. You know, can you come to church? Sure, come to church. It says, as far as you can go within the church and membership and stuff like that, that's great. It says, but you will preach exaltation. If you have a problem with preaching exaltation, you're going to be quite limited in what you're going to be going for. That's what this church is about. In our belief system, that's what Christ is about. That is the reason for following Christ, is to be a joint heir with Him to all that the Father has. This is not a Book of Mormon particular thing. This comes from the New Testament. If you want to have what Christ is going to have, which is exaltation, and you want to be a joint heir with Him in exaltation, it says, this means that you pursue exaltation. You don't follow this subculture and say the church needs to change to accommodate me. It says it's just not there, and it's not going to happen. And if that bursts a bubble, then that's it. I had an interesting time. There used to be a thing on the World Wide Web called Web Rings. It was used predominantly back in the day when search engines didn't have very many links tied to them, didn't point at very many websites, and the way to really kind of advertise webs was by affiliating yourself with other websites that were kind of like yours, and and being a part of a web ring, you would click on a button either next or previous, and it would take you to the next website in that web ring, and you could go all the way around, and it was cool. And I don't recall my website ever being in a web ring. I finally have added mine to a couple of web rings. There is this one, it's called Yesterweb, which I think is funny because it touts itself as, you know, this is for websites that look like the old days of the web. And mine does, you know, mine's very simplified HTML. I write it, you know, my website is hard-coded, handwritten HTML. I've tried to make it a little more dynamic, but I've just kind of given up on it, to be honest. You know, I don't have a ton of stuff, and the stuff that I add, I can just add manually to it without having to resort to being okay. It makes it nice because I can change web servers whenever I like, you know, which web engine I'm using. Right now I use Caddy, and I like Caddy. Caddy's great. Anyway, so it makes it so I can have SSL. I don't even really have to think about it. It just works. Anyway, there's one web ring called Yesterweb, and it's like, oh, well, mine fits that criteria. But they had a little thing about you need to be, you know, you don't want to be discriminatory, you don't want to be this and that. So I sent it to my thing, and they came right back and said, oh, you are not wonderful about LGBT people according to our criteria, so your thing is rejected. If you want to try again, clean up your site and then try to get it relisted. It's like, oh no, I'm not interested in redoing my site, you know, because I'm very much a person who says this is the way it is. You know, I've got a purpose in life, and it isn't to make people feel good and to feel accepted and stuff like that. It's just not part of my way of thinking. It says, I'm here to help people get to exaltation. And other people, if people are not interested in being on that road to exaltation, like I said, you can come to church. Everybody can come to church. Jeffrey Dahmer can come to church. Sirhan Sirhan can come to the church and visit. You know, Adolf Hitler can come to the church. Not a problem at all. Why? Because we accept everybody. Christ's mandate to us is everybody. No, we don't accept everybody. I mean, they can come as visitors. Now, can they take over the meetings? No. Can they do stuff like, you know, can I do this and that? Can they be there trying to promulgate a different agenda besides the agenda set out by the restored gospel of Jesus Christ through Joseph Smith that leads to exaltation? You got it yet? You don't know. You can't. It's not going to be permitted. We'll take you out in the hall and say, you're welcome to come, you're welcome to sit, you're welcome to listen, you're welcome to be here. It says, but let me tell you what the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is about. This is what we're about. And this is the agenda. You don't screw with the agenda. Okay? That's not what it's here about. You can have all the doubts you want. You can disagree with it all you want. Fine. You know, people say, well, what about the priesthood for women? You go, I don't have any opinion about it, because that is a matter of church governance, and it doesn't really, you know, could women having the priesthood get in the way of the agenda? And you go, no. And you go, okay, well then it's not a problem. It's not a problem with the agenda. So it could it happen? And says, oh yeah, it could happen. Says, I don't know. That doesn't bother me. Am I going to support it? I don't. That's neither here nor there whether I would support it or not. I'm about the agenda. It could very well change. It could. I'm not saying it can't. Oh there, hi there, howdy howdy. Somebody, it's pretty normal for almost nobody to be on this road, so it's not surprising. You have to be careful of people coming in off other parts of the street to do this stuff. I think I've done a good job of picking this thing through, and it really helped me to. It really helped me to figuring out what do I really feel? How do I really feel about all this stuff? And you go, that's what I feel. He says, that's what this place is about. You know, and you go, oh, well, he sounds really liberal now. Now he's going to have a problem with women having the priesthood. And you go, that is a matter of church governance, and I have nothing to do with that. He says, that's not my purview. My purview is to execute the agenda of exaltation. He says, and if you are not on the road to exaltation, and we can help you, you know, and then, yeah, I'm not so sure, you know, I really have to say that I really question whether, you know, why on earth are you here if this isn't the agenda? And I don't want to hear that, you know, this is the church that your parents and your great-grandparents and all those other people went to. And you go, that's, you have to understand, I am not here to service that desire. I don't care about your lineage in this case. It's just not interesting. Anyway, so, okay. I think that's all I got to say. So here it is. Have a great day. Talk to you later. Bye.